I'm Jordan Rudas, and I'm the enrollment coordinator at Pleasant Ridge Waldorf School here. And I'm going to turn it over here to Dan Brown, and he's going to get us started here tonight.
Great. Thanks, Jordan. Hi, everyone. I'm Dan Brown. Thanks for joining us tonight. I am a parent of three. I have an eighth grader who's very excited, getting ready to graduate, and a fifth grader in Pleasant Ridge right now. And I've been on the finance committee now for 8 years, and I can tell you that school choice and the discussion surrounding school choice began in earnest a couple of years ago. And it's something the school had certainly considered in the past. But I just want to shed a little bit of light on what kind of prompted the conversation and how we got to this point where as a school we decided it would be a good fit, just to give you a little context for where we're at and hopefully understand kind of where our future lies. So Pleasant Ridge has been around since 1980 and started by artists and farmers predominantly. And something the organization has always prided itself on is being accessible and being a school that was very socioeconomically diverse. And what we've discovered in the last 5 years or so is that, you know, we have to balance this accessibility and factor with just kind of the financial needs of the school. And this is continues to get more and more challenging. And it's a very delicate balance between making sure that we have adequate funding to deliver the kind of pedagogical curriculum and experience that we want to provide at Pleasant Ridge, and at the same time be able to accommodate parents from a wide variety of backgrounds and situations. And so a couple of years ago, I was approached by a couple of different parents that had just asked if we had considered choice or looked at choice, and conversations with Hallie Ashley, who's going to jump in here soon, we started to really think that maybe we owed it to ourselves in the school to revisit the choice program. And so in February, it was actually pre-COVID, in February, we convened a subcommittee, the finance committee, just to kind of explore this topic and at the very least be able to explain to parents why we weren't doing choice. And it really quickly became apparent that choice was potentially a really good fit for the school. Now the program has matured and changed some since its first initiation, I guess you'd say. And so we started to really ask ourselves the tough questions of, is this the kind of program that is going to maybe allow us to have more financial stability and kind of ease the burden financially on a lot of families that really stretch to make sending their children to Pleasant Ridge a priority. And so as we continue to look at it and kind of look for obvious reasons or hurdles why it wouldn't be a good fit with our culture, or, you know, would it infringe upon the curriculum, all these really important concerns of making sure that we still retained our independence and autonomy and could deliver the kind of the Pleasant Ridge experience, we were really kind of surprised and excited that, in fact, there's really no reason we couldn't move forward with choice. So we brought it to the board in June after 3 or 4 months of the subcommittee really kind of exploring it and said, you know, here's what we found. And the board was really enthusiastic and said, hey, this sounds great. This looks like this could be a good fit. And we've been working on it since. So, you know, I think that I would just say there's, you know, at this point, as we're closing in on, I think we're 2 weeks away from the deadline for the final school choice enrollment. I would just say that overwhelmingly, the response within the community has been really positive. We've heard a lot of feedback from parents and even folks outside of Pleasant Ridge that are really excited that this is an opportunity to kind of continue to make this school accessible to people both in our immediate community and outside of it. And so we're really excited that we've been able to bring this forward, and we're looking forward to seeing how this year goes with school choice. So with that, I think now I'd like to turn it over to to Hallie to kind of just discuss some of the key aspects of the program. Is that right, Hallie?
I think first we'll turn it to Carrie.
Okay, great.
And then Hallie's coming up.
Here's my fifth grader's beloved teacher, Carrie. Please take it away.
Thank you, Dan. So I'm going to give kind of just a brief overview of Waldorf education in case that's helpful to anyone who's out there. And feel free to ask questions at the end too. So Waldorf education was founded on the basis of social renewal. And we know we can use that in this day and age as well. It's a worldwide independent school movement. It was founded about 100 years ago in Europe. And currently there are 1,000 Waldorf schools in 60 countries. And about 150 of those are operating in North America. So Waldorf education is developmentally focused. It's well-rounded and there's arts integrated in all of the subjects. And the arts are used to enliven learning. And we inspire to, we aim to inspire lifelong learning in all the students and enable them to fully develop their own capacities. I find that the students really love school. You may have heard the term head, heart, and hands before. And what this refers to is how the learning process is threefold. So the head, heart, and hands, or thinking, feeling, and willing, are engaged in every lesson. There's a threefoldness to every lesson, whether a subject lesson or a math lesson. And that really helps to engage the whole child. That's what we refer to as the whole child in their learning. The curriculum is very rich and living. As class teachers, we stay with the children. So we start with them often in first grade after an early childhood stint. You know, perhaps they were in the kindergarten or perhaps they just enter in first grade. And ideally the class teacher would stay with the children all the way through eighth grade. So that helps a teacher both to keep everything fresh. You know, we're learning a new curriculum every year, and it also keeps it fresh for the children, that it's new for all of us at the same time. That's just one benefit of staying with the children. There are other benefits, of course, because you really get to know the children as individuals. You get to know their families. You see them through all the phases of development of childhood. And by the end of eighth grade, you're really close. So each year has a story curriculum, and I'll just give you an example from fifth grade. I'm the fifth grade teacher this year. And in fifth grade, a child is generally 10 turning 11. They might be 11 at the beginning of fifth grade. And this moment in a child's life is often called a golden year. It's when the heart and breathing ratio kind of equalizes to a 4-to-1 ratio. You'll see their physicality is often very balanced and harmonious. They're strong. They're coordinated. They can do many tasks that are asked of them. And this is before the onset of puberty for many. And so it's kind of like this last moment in a child's life before there's many more changes coming again. And so the idea that the story curriculum of each year meets the child where they are developmentally, not just physically, but also in their soul life, that the curriculum in fifth grade is, one of the curriculums is ancient civilizations. And so we often follow the civilizations of ancient India, ancient Persia, Mesopotamia, Egypt, and eventually Greece. And it said that the evolution of consciousness of humanity mirrors the evolution of consciousness of the individual. And so, of course, that's for us as adults to ponder. It's not something that we bring to the children, but what that looks like is delving into each of these civilizations and arriving at this point of ancient Greece, generally by the end of fifth grade, when the child, fifth grader, is kind of at their pinnacle too of truth and beauty. And that kind of mirrors the Greek culture. You can picture the beautiful sculptures and architecture and the thinking that was done by the philosophers at that time. And that comes right at the moment when the fifth grader is entering a fifth grade pentathlon, which is often in May, and it's a rite of passage, a culmination of that fifth grade year that the fifth grader has been preparing for all year. There's five disciplines: throwing the javelin, throwing the discus, upright wrestling, relay, and long jump. And rather than being a competition, it's kind of an opportunity for each child to live into each event and do their best in form, which is beauty, and just do the event to their best of their ability, which is truth. And the children really love this event, and it's held in kind of this place where, you know, not secrecy, but the children don't really know what to expect, and then they go through it, and then they've arrived at the end of it, and they just feel a little older, like then they're ready for sixth grade. So I hope that's a good example of each year is special in that way, where it really meets the child where they are developmentally. So I'm a class teacher, but each child also has maybe five, sometimes six subject teachers. In our school, we offer five subjects. In the music department, we've got general music and recorder in the lower grades. And in the upper grades, we have strings and recorder and chorus. We have handwork for all grades. We have movement and games. And then there's something called eurythmy, which is a really specialized art form specific to Waldorf schools. And it's actually visual speech that is done silently, but to a poem or to music. And then foreign language, and our foreign language is Spanish. And the subject teachers work with the whole school, all the grades, and in kindergarten, there's usually just eurythmy. And if this class teacher is akin to the sun in the universe of a child's life, then the subjects are like the planets surrounding the sun, kind of orbiting around them. And by the end of eighth grade, they know each individual intimately as well. And the last thing I'll talk about is the relationship between teacher and student, and between student and student is really emphasized. It's just absolutely true that relationships are what help education, you know, that relationship, that connection you have to your teachers and to your students if you are a teacher. So in mixed age kindergartens, a child may be in kindergarten from age 3 to 6, or maybe just one of those years. There's a special bond made there. And then in the Waldorf classes, I've already said the teacher may stay with the class from 1st through 8th grade. And then some of the students may be there together throughout that whole time as well. And they become a close-knit family. Even the students who have already graduated are still in touch, you know, and we're always going to be in each other's lives. And so let's see, last thing. I was just kind of reflecting on how it was to say goodbye today before spring break, you know, and if it's COVID times, but you want to hug them all, you know, and you will miss them over spring break. And then saying goodbye at summertime is something even stronger than that. And then the goodbye after eighth grade is really profound because you're sending them forth in freedom. And that's just kind of shows what has been built over these 8 years together. So then I'll just talk a little bit about Pleasant Ridge specifically. I know Dan mentioned that it began 41 years ago. We are a fully accredited school within the Association of Waldorf Schools of North America, and also with the Waldorf Early Childhood Association of North America. And we undergo a reaccreditation process every 7 years to maintain that distinction. Our campus now has five different locations that we've put to good use this year with outdoor classrooms. We have our main building that you probably know. We have our old main building that's out on Decker and Washington Street. That's where my class is currently housed. And eurythmy is generally taught there. We have our green space next door. We have the grounds at Growing for Good, which hosted four outdoor classrooms this year, three outdoor classrooms, and then the Wooded Acre kind of down the street. And those are all kind of within a block or two of each other. And our enrollment was about 114 this year. We had 138 last year before COVID, and we expect that to start to fill out again. And this year, our class sizes are between about 7 and 17. If there's anything I missed, thank you for listening. Either Jordan can step in, or if anybody has questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Yeah, that was great, Carrie. Thanks.
Thanks.
Are there any questions right now? Otherwise, there'll be time at the end for questions as well. Okay, well, we're going to just keep moving on then, and I'm going to turn it over to Robin.
Thanks, Jordan. Hi, everybody. I'm Robin Kotke. I am a parent in the school of two daughters in fifth grade and second grade, and I'm also the development director at the school. And Carrie, thank you for giving such a great overview. I will say that as a parent, one of my very favorite things about the school is our ability and encouragement to participate in the life of the school. And that is really rare, I think, these days. And so one of the things that was a surprise to us and a pleasant surprise was that we knew that our daughters would really thrive, you know, based on who they are and that this was really a good fit for them. But what we didn't anticipate is that it would be so good for us, you know, my husband and I, and then also, you know, just for our family in general, because the community here is really just really special. So I know that I am going to talk about the different choice programs in Wisconsin. And is that right, Jordan?
Yep, and I can pull up the slide too.
Okay, great, thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. So just an overview of choice programs in Wisconsin. There are three. It started years ago with the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program. Within a couple of years, Racine developed a program for the Racine area. And then I think in 2013, a program was started for the rest of Wisconsin for all other school districts and counties in Wisconsin. So let's see. And so the way that works is that each child that qualifies for a choice seat, if you will, their tuition at a private or independent school is paid for by the state. And in our case, it just so happens to match the amount that would be full pay tuition. And so something else that I want to say about that is that, you know, we have always had a tuition adjustment program to be as accessible as possible. And that is something that we will still maintain because there are families who don't quite qualify for choice because maybe their income is slightly higher than the maximum. But that is something that we will still continue to offer families who don't qualify for choice. That was something that came up recently, and I thought, oh, that's something really important to point out. That you know, we will remain committed, as we always have been, to working with every family to ensure that this education is available.
Great, and then I think now Hallie is just going to kind of talk about the eligibility around the program, and I can pull up this other screen here.
That would be great. Okay. So eligibility for applying for a family to qualify for a choice seat, there are three kind of main requirements. So overview of those would be residency, of course, state of Wisconsin, but not in Milwaukee or Racine, age and attendance, and then the income. So we'll just, the residency, that's obvious, but the age and attendance can be a little bit nuanced, so we'll go over that. Applying for kindergarten, so it is applicable to current families that are applying for a kindergarten spot, which would be defined as aged 4 or 5, or going into first grade. And so those are the only three spaces that are available to our current parent body if you have a student enrolled this year. The other And then for the all the rest of the grades, that's available for any new student coming in that meet the other requirements. So hopefully that's clear. And then of course there's the income limits. And so there are two sets of numbers here. So we're going to be looking at the family size and then this highlighted one over to the right. And so that's a pretty hard and fast number, and that will be verified. So you apply online and then you'll need to verify that that is your, in fact, your family's income. And then you, that ensures that you'll qualify for a seat. So those are the three qualifiers. And I know that there, I'm sure there's some questions with that, but that's the overview. And I don't know if we need that $7,000 for a married couple, just to point that number out. That was on the income. So they have it so that it's in the family income, but if you're married, it's $7,000 less. So these numbers are determined by the state. So that's where those are at.
Yep. Thanks, Hallie. Does anyone have any questions just on the eligibility requirements there before we move on and talk about how you can apply?
I have a quick question.
Go ahead, hi, Beth.
Hi. It's super specific. Anna will be 4 in November. Does that qualify as like a K-4 spot?
Yeah, that's a good question. So to qualify for the K-4, you have to be turning 4 by September 1st.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. Any other questions? Okay. Well, so applying is super straightforward, and I'm going to share my screen here. And you just go to the DPI, to their website, and actually if you went back to their main website, you can just click here, apply now, on the online parent application. Parents have to apply every year. So even if you your child got a seat this year, you still have to apply next year and subsequent years. In the Wisconsin program that we're participating in, there is only one open enrollment period every year. And this year it started on February 1st and it does end on April 15th. So it's coming up here. When you go to apply, you'll be taken here and you just need to have an email address. And then once you, it'll go walk you through there, it'll ask you some questions about income and you can choose. There are two different ways you can verify your income. And then once you have completed it, and if for some reason you wouldn't meet one of the requirements, or it would tell you right there on the screen and would probably stop you. But if you make it through and tells you, it'll then send you a confirmation email and then tell you what documents you then need to bring to the school, because then we take those documents that you provide and then we go back in and we verify everything. Let's see. There is also this. Where does that add? There was a little checklist for parents here. When you go to apply, making sure you have the email. And families can apply for at different schools. So that is something that a parent could do if they wanted to apply to different ones. And then, And then typically, so the application period ends the 15th. We have some reports and stuff that are due on our end by the beginning of May. So then usually by June, the DPI will notify parents directly through the email address that you provided when you applied, if your child got a seat or not. And then you have 5 days to let the school know if you would like to accept your seat. And that's kind of how that works. And we have a really nice, an organization in Wisconsin put together a really great tutorial, kind of walking a parent through the steps to apply to the program. And it's on our website. If you wanted to take a peek at that, it's pretty helpful. But it is pretty straightforward. We've heard from some parents that said it was really slick and easy to do. And I think that's it. Any questions on, Robin, do you want to add some?
Yes, thanks. Somebody asked me the other day and I thought, maybe I should point this out. He wanted to know if he didn't realize that that he could apply for multiple years. If your child is accepted, you don't need to provide financial information every year. You just need to indicate every year that you intend to send your child the following
right.
year.
Right. Yes.
So that's great, because that's just, it's not rigmarole you have to go through every year. And speaking of rigmarole, what I've heard from folks who have applied is that it is a pretty straightforward process, and there are two different ways to verify your income that are important to note before you actually apply, because oftentimes people, especially with COVID, things may have changed. So there's called a DPI method and a DOR method. And it's really a good idea to watch the tutorial before you actually apply, so that you, so that if your financial situation, has changed somewhat, you just want to choose the method that is going to be the most accurate. And I think that's probably enough said. The tutorial is just really great. It's maybe like a 5-minute tutorial.
Yeah. So I guess just to end it here, and then we'll just turn it over for questions. So the next steps would be, if you are interested in enrolling and applying to the program, so it would be to get that parent application filled out right away, sooner than later, just because we can't go back after the 15th and get any corrected documents or anything if need be. So if you can supply us with the documents that are needed sooner than later, we have time to correct anything, because we have to make sure names match and addresses match and all of that. So if any of that needs to be corrected, it could take some time. And so it's nice to have some time to do that if needed. And then if you haven't had a school tour, that would be the next thing as well. And then filling out just the regular Pleasant Ridge enrollment application for your child. And then after that, we would still love to do a classroom visit if possible, and especially, with a grade student. And we can do those, all the way up, through mid-May or so. And then after we have usually the classroom visit, we usually schedule a time for the parents to meet with the teachers and kind of get to know your family and talk about the class and how the visit went. And it's just a really helpful meeting to have. But that's kind of all I wanted to say. Okay, so now I'm just going to turn it over to whoever has questions, I guess. Now it looks like Beth had some. Looks like we answered that. Any other questions out there? Was there anything that we missed? Anyone on the committee that you want to, anything you want to add?
I'm curious who's out there, if you're willing to introduce yourself. It's such a mystery.
Yeah, especially when they just say like iPhone.
Yeah.
You really don't know who that could be.
Etta saying something. Oh, thank you. She wondered, when will we find out if we have been offered a spot?
Yeah, good question. Typically, it does vary a little bit according to the DPI, but they say usually by June. Parents are notified by email. And then you have 5 days to let the school know if you accept the seat or not.
Hi, I have a question. I was just wondering, we are currently homeschooling our boys, and if we did fill out the application and say, you know, we got approved or accepted, would we be able to do like the school tour, all that, I'm assuming after that date? Just wondering if for some reason we were to decide, hey, this just isn't the right fit for us, is that going to like cause a problem if we've already gone through the application process? Mm-hmm.
So you're saying after you found out if you got a seat or not, you're asking?
Yeah, I guess I just would feel bad. You know, let's say we went through the application process and got a spot, and then, you know, we came and toured the school, or, you know, and then just decided, you know what, hey, this just isn't right for us. I guess what would the process be? You know, I don't want to say to unenroll, but, you know, I would just not want to take a spot and then not fully commit. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Well, I think what would happen is if you decided you didn't want your spot, which I'm sure comes up from time to time for parents if they move or whatever, then it would go to the next person on the waiting list, is my understanding.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. If there is a waiting list, I guess.
Jordan, did you say how long the parents have to stay? Because you said it was 5 days. Yeah, 5 days.
They have five days to say yes.
So that would be a kind of a short window.
Yeah, we could certainly squeeze a tour in there in that 5 days, but getting like a classroom visit and stuff, obviously, if it's June, school's already out, so that wouldn't probably work.
Yeah, yep. And that's totally understandable. I know it's just we're kind of at the tail end of it. It's just kind of all new to us, so.
Yeah.
But thank you.
Yeah, no problem. It's a good question. Any other questions?
Robin's got her hand up.
Oh, go ahead.
Jordan, we're encouraging folks to come before, not necessarily before you apply, but before you find out in June, right? To visit
more possible. If that works for the family, that would probably be best.
Sure. And then what would you say in terms of, you know, the number of seats that we have available? I know that, I don't know that that's something that's necessarily shared, the number of seats, but, just based on the response so far, how is that looking compared to the number of seats that may be available or that will be available?
I mean, right now, the most of the applications that are coming towards us are definitely geared towards the early childhood and younger grades, like the first grade. So right now, there are still, I would say, enough seats available in the grades, you know, especially 2 through 6 that we're offering for next year.
Thank you.
Right. Any other questions out there?
Thanks, Beth. We're excited too.
Oh, I didn't see that pop up on the chat. Oh, thanks, Beth. Yeah.
I hope to meet some of you next, the ones I don't know yet already.
All right. Well, any final questions here? I guess we'll wrap it up if there aren't any further questions. But so you can always call the school. We're on spring break next week, but you know, you can still email, reach out and email if you have any questions, any trouble, if you go to apply. there'll still be someone answering emails. So you can just email me at jordan.brudas@pleasantridgewaldorf.org. Or you can just call the school and there will be a voice message with an email too there that you can reach out to. And if you haven't had a tour and you're interested in doing that, please reach out as well. I'd be happy. I'm pretty flexible. So if you'd rather do it after a school day or on a weekend or something like that, we can be super flexible. All right. Well, thank you everybody for coming. Have a great night.
Thank you, Jordan. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.